From Michigan Radio, this is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Today we hear from Governor Whitmer about the state's first day under her stay-at-home order.
The most important tool that we have is the ability to just distance from one another.
And we'll talk with the superintendent of Detroit's schools about his desire to end the school year immediately. Later on in the program, we'll discuss the domino effect of cash flow in housing. First, a waitress who was laid off.
You know, I'm applying for unemployment. I'm doing everything that anyone says that I can do to help prepare myself. But other than that, I just kind of try to stay positive.
Then a landlord whose many tenants are suffering.
You know, I know I've worked with many of them for years. They've been here with me for a long time. I'm not just going to, like, process a bunch of eviction notices, even if I could.
And a mortgage lender talks about how the COVID-19 outbreak affects banking. Those stories and more coming up. Welcome to Stateside. I'm April Baer. As of early this morning, Michigan is under an official stay-at-home order. We can still go out for exercise and essential activities like grocery shopping and medical appointments, but the state order requires non-essential businesses to close any of their in-person operations, and it stops any gatherings with people who are not members of your household. Governor Gretchen Whitmer announced the order Monday, and it lasts until April 13th. Whitmer joined Michigan Radio's Morning Edition host, Doug Tribou, to talk about the scope of the order and other effects of the coronavirus pandemic.
Why was this the right step for the state, and when did you know it was necessary?
You know, I was on the phone all weekend with experts from across the country, from University of Michigan to Harvard and many other places, and it became very apparent to me that the trajectory that we are on looks like Italy. And that's the worst case scenario, is if we don't take aggressive actions now, our whole healthcare system crumbles and gets overwhelmed and more people die and our economy suffers longer. And so it really was important that we do this. The most important tool that we have in a situation where we don't have enough tests, enough masks, enough gowns, enough face shields, the most important tool that we have is the ability to just distance from one another. We can mitigate the spread of this, but it is going to have to be because of aggressive measures like the stay-home order yesterday. If you're a non-essential employee or worker or in a non-essential industry to life, then the best thing you can do to contribute to us getting through this crisis is to stay at home. It's the best thing for you and for your families and for our economy.
Governor, the news has been shifting a lot day to day, even hour by hour. You have issued many orders in these last several days. Do you see any additional changes coming our way beyond this stay-at-home order?
Well, there will be other needs to ensure that people aren't put out of their homes for lack of payment, because we've got a lot of people out of work right now. We've taken those kind of actions, but I could anticipate there being additional ones that we would want to take to protect people in this very precarious time. So I'm not having any announcement right now, but we are continually working with people, advocacy groups, and industry to make sure that we're being really thoughtful about the actions that we're taking and doing everything we can to just support our hospitals and our frontline responders and even the grocery clerk who's working so many hours to keep food available. We have to protect each of those industries and make sure that they've got the support they need.
The availability of testing is an ongoing national problem. Where do things stand on our ability to test for COVID-19 in Michigan right now?
Well, unfortunately, we've not had as many tests as we need. We have dramatically improved the number of people that we're testing, but we do not have enough of the testing material. And so because of that, we're not able to really have the kind of robust data that we need in order to create the type of isolation you want, mitigating spread. You know, in the ordinary circumstance, if you're not feeling well, you go in, they test you, they give you some medication, they've got all the materials they need to treat you. As we continue to ramp up and more tests become available from the federal government to the states, we'll get in a better position, but it's going to take a little bit of time.
With schools closed, districts started hustling to connect with their students online, and the available resources and approaches vary widely across the state. But it came as a surprise to many parents and teachers when the State Department of Education said online learning will not count toward official K-12 classroom time. You've said you disagree with that. What is your administration doing in response?
So we are a little over 1 week into the initial 3 weeks off that I ordered for schools. We've now extended that by another week. We are working collaboratively with the MDE. It was kind of dismayed when they put that order out there because we hadn't had the opportunity to really sit with our leaders at the local level, our ISD, our teachers, our superintendents, to figure out how we're going to meet the needs of our kids. You know, at this juncture, we've not called off the school year. We have made meaningful attempts to ensure that we are being thoughtful as we put together a plan for our kids. But it's not, we're not in a position where we've made changes in terms of how, what that looks like. And it's got to be informed, and we've got to have a plan to meet the needs of our kids. And that's what we are spearheading. It's ongoing, you know, as we speak, and it's inclusive of the legislature because they have to be a part of what this looks like in fashioning it. I can't do it unilaterally. The MDE can't do it unilaterally, and the legislature can't do it unilaterally. We all have to be a part of solving this for our kids, and that is well underway.
Governor Whitmer, with expectations that you referenced earlier that we will see a surge in cases here in the U.S. and in Michigan, as many other countries have, I've heard a lot of people saying the worst is yet to come. What is your response to that?
Well, I think that's accurate. We know that this aggressive order, you know, that I issued yesterday that went into effect at 12:01 this morning is really important. But let's be clear, the cases are going to keep rising, because we're doing more testing, and this COVID-19 has been spreading across our state for weeks before it shows up. And so we know that we're going to continue to see these cases rise, and that's why this action was so important to do yesterday. Our healthcare system is going to get pushed to the brink. We are, because we can't get everything we need from the federal government, working with partners inside and outside of Michigan to obtain the masks, to obtain gowns. We are going to produce some ourselves, as a state, but also working with people in the private sector to meet this need. We've seen distilleries start to produce hand sanitizer, and those are wonderful things to see people coming together, but we're nowhere near meeting need that we currently have in hospitals, much less what we're projected to have to meet as the surge continues to go up. And so we've got to all do our part by staying away from one another, keeping us from crushing our hospitals and our primary caregivers by more and more people getting sick. We're going to continue to see this trajectory, and that's why everyone's got to play their part. It's on all of us to be a part of making sure that we mitigate the impact that our state is going to suffer.
Governor Whitmer, a final question. How long do you think we should expect life to be disrupted on this level? The current order lasts through April 13th. Do you expect it to go beyond that?
Well, Doug, if everyone does their part, it will shorten the amount of time that we are under severe restrictions like this. If people break the order, they go out, they continue to see one another unnecessarily, it will take us a longer time. And that's why it's really important that everyone takes this seriously, that they protect themselves, and they stop spreading this disease by staying home. The most important patriotic thing a person can do right now is stay home and stop the spread of COVID-19.
That's Governor Gretchen Whitmer talking with Michigan Radio's Doug Tribou. There are many competing concerns in Lansing right now, but Michigan schools in a state of suspension are close to the top of most people's lists. Rick Pluta is Capitol Bureau Chief for the Michigan Public Radio Network. Hey, Rick.
Hello.
You filed a story this week noting that the state's top education leaders do not have an answer about what's going to happen with many academic requirements this year, things that kids need to graduate and other kinds of standards. Can you recap for us?
What the Michigan Department of Education has said is that schools don't qualify for state reimbursement if students aren't in the schools and in their seats, that online learning time doesn't count, other types of assigning homework via email and things like that don't count. And that poses a financial hardship on schools when they're already dealing with all kinds of other things. And the department says that they have no choice, that if they're going to fix this problem that poses this hardship on schools, then it's going to take a new state law adopted by the legislature and signed by the governor to fix this. And all of this is happening is there are a lot of other questions swirling around for how long are schools going to be closed? In fact, are we facing the end of the school year? Has that already occurred if this lingers on? So that's the kinds of things that they're talking about.
Rick, I'm sure you know that the superintendent of Detroit's public schools, Nikolai Vitti, has said in no uncertain terms that he thinks this needs to be the end of the school year. As you were, I know you were doing your reporting before he made that statement, but as you were asking questions of State Department of Education officials, was there any serious talk of that?
Well, getting a straight answer out of anyone or getting an answer out of anyone at the State Department of Education right now is a challenge in and of itself. And that's not necessarily an indictment on the department, that things are moving so quickly, it's hard for anyone in any position of responsibility to make any kind of educated prediction about what's going to happen. But clearly there's an awareness that that's a distinct possibility, and it may very well be that we're going to require changes in laws and policies that deal with this year as a distinct entity, separate from all of those other policy debates about what schools should be or should not be doing, separate from all that.
Was anyone talking about an intensive summer school effort this year?
We have heard about a bunch of different options. One of them is just call the school year done and everyone gets moved forward a grade and seniors graduate and it's just taken care of. There are issues related to school testing. One of the things that's being talked about in terms of the school calendar is maybe instead of a summer break that happens in, you know, one block of weeks, that schools are staggered throughout the summer, which obviously would play havoc with vacation and summer camp plans and things like that.
Rick Plutas, Capitol Bureau Chief for Michigan's public radio stations. Rick, thank you so much.
Always a pleasure.
This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. The days are starting to slip into weeks for parents of school-age kids, even for those lucky enough to have access to technology and a solid internet connection. The school shutdown is for real, and Michigan's Department of Education has decided not to treat distance learning as a reimbursable classroom instruction. It's against this background and many, many unanswered questions that the superintendent of Michigan's largest public school district is trying to plan for the needs of 50,000 young people. Nikolai Vitti, PhD, joins us now with an update. What's going on? Welcome to Stateside, sir.
Thank you.
You wrote an open letter to Governor Whitmer strongly suggesting, among other things, that Michigan's school year be brought to an end right now. Why?
I just think it's inevitable. I think when you look at the reality of this health crisis, when you see what's happening in other countries that have been dealing with this for longer periods of time, I just don't see how realistically we can assure everyone's health by returning to school in a couple of weeks or even a couple months. I believe it would just be more practical and actually thoughtful to say we're not going to have school for the rest of the school year. It'll allow districts to reorganize their delivery methods for instruction. We can train teachers. We can try to use laptops that are in school with the right kind of flexibility with funding at the federal and state level, give those out to families, try to figure out internet access, leverage the business community, and just shift for enrichment and expanded enrichment through online learning, and then offer summer classes, if possible, to students that need credits or even for enrichment, and then start the next school year fresh. We're just punting the inevitable. And the more we punt and the more we wait, we just can't reorganize to do what we could in a practical way regarding more enrichment opportunities for students. We're just in a state of paralysis, and I would feel free to think differently if I weren't.
You know, I think the thing that's so scary about this is that it implies that things may not be back to normal in the fall either. Is that how you feel about it?
Right now, I'm optimistic, and not just for the sake of being optimistic, that we'll be back to school in the fall. We're only at the beginning of this health crisis when you look at what's happened in other countries. And that's not to be skeptical or pessimistic or cynical. I just think that we have to talk about this realistically. But with that, I think that I'm hopeful that by June we can turn the corner and talk about opening schools in the fall. But I think anything before then, we just have to think about it lost from a regular school experience point of view.
What would you say the biggest challenges for Detroit's kids are during this time?
Well, you know, every time we go on break, I worry about our children. I worry about our children all the time, but I especially worry during breaks because our parents are going through a lot. Our parents are trying to survive. Just, you know, keeping jobs, keeping the lights on in the house, keeping the water running. These are just basic life necessities that our parents deal with. So couple all children being at home, it just creates a burden that they're not used to. And children get lost in that. So that's what I worry about, is that our children are not, our parents love our children, but our parents are dealing with some real survival life issues. I mean, put this in the context. When we started the food distribution process last Wednesday, we gave out 20,000 meals. I mean, it was actually higher than that, but just think about that for a minute, that 20,000 families came for breakfast and lunch pickup just to feed themselves and their children. And so we forget about that in America. We forget about there's a whole group of people that are just literally trying to survive. Everyone is affected at some level from this crisis. The most wealthy to those living in the greatest amount of poverty, but the fewer resources you have, the more grave this crisis is. And so I just worry about our children not being connected to school, where there's a routine, a regularity of learning, access to food, and adults that have the time to give them attention.
There's so much frontline stuff being worked out right now that it's hard to think about the long-term picture. But what do you think should happen with students this fall, assuming that we do go back to school on time? Should kids be held back for the grade they did not complete?
No. You know, I think we have to look at this as an anomaly, as a unique circumstance, and just think differently about how we normally deal with credits and graduation. I think we have to subtract the credits that were normally required for graduating seniors minus this last semester. So if they were on pace based on their credits to graduate, had everything gone according to plan this last semester, then they still graduate. And then if you go beyond the seniors, everyone, mainly at the middle school and high school level where we deal with credits, would not be required to make up this semester's worth of credits. And then beyond that, at the lower grade levels, and including the middle school and high school, the decision to promote would be a teacher decision based on the consent of the parent. I think it's a logistical logjam nightmare scenario to have multiple students repeat the grade that they're in. And then we rely on summer school. We rely maybe on upcoming breaks to offer more enrichment opportunities for students to catch up learning. And there's still time between now and the fall to offer enrichment opportunities. But this is a unique circumstance, and we can't penalize children, and it doesn't make sense for people to repeat grades.
What would you like the district's families to know about what school officials are up against at the moment?
You know, I want everyone to know that we want to return to school. I've heard some crazy people out there that just say, well, we have low expectations, we don't want to work. You know, anyone that says that honestly doesn't really know what it's like to be an educator or who educators are. We're struggling right now as educators because we know that we are the stability that a lot of our children need and have, and we're not able to do that in school. But because of the health crisis, it just doesn't make sense to have kids at school. But if we have the right guidance and the right support from the legislature, we can do things differently. And I don't want to make this a Republican-Democrat conversation, but our governor is trying to lead. And the legislature had a chance last week to give some appropriations to schools, to the healthcare industry, to businesses. And they couldn't make a decision. They're supposed to meet on the 25th. The rumor is that they're going to delay until mid-April, and that just can't happen. Everyone has to do their part in leading and problem solving and providing the resources so people can do what they need to do to shift to help our community. So I'm pleading with the legislature to step up and put politics aside and figure out how they help communities, because people are hurting right now.
We've been speaking with Nikolai Vitti, superintendent of Detroit's public schools. Mr. Vitti, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Think for a minute about teachers' aides working on contract at your local school, or bartenders, or Uber drivers, or hairstylists, nail technicians, house cleaners, so many other Michiganders who are not getting paid right now because of the new coronavirus. Their hardship has repercussions for the people that their lives and livelihoods support. Today, we wanted to examine the domino effect the COVID-19 lockdown is having at several spots along the rental market economy. Let's start today with one waitress in Detroit.
Hello, my name is Crystal Michael Brasseur. I'm 22 years old. I actually live in the city of Detroit. I am a server at the Monarch Club as well as a full-time student at Wayne State. I'm currently going to school for my bachelor's in secondary education, and I hope to be an English teacher by the end of all of this craziness because I'm really close to finishing my program.
Crystal, welcome to Stateside. Do you mind telling us when the Monarch Club decided to pull the trigger?
Yeah, it was actually on the 15th. We didn't pull our trigger until basically we'd seen the day of that Gretchen Whitmer had urged all of the restaurants to shut down in the state of Michigan. So that's when they did that. But initially, they weren't going to close until it was like mandatory.
Was it something that you had been thinking about or worrying about?
I honestly didn't see it happening so fast. I really thought I was going to have another like week or two of work at least, to be honest with you. I really did not see it like shut down of restaurants coming so quickly. So it wasn't something I would say I was necessarily prepared for, but it was definitely something we were all talking about.
Yeah.
But it was like very swift. There was really no way to prepare.
Can you tell me a little bit about your living situation?
Well, I actually live in a studio apartment by myself. I have like two cats. I'm trying to figure out how exactly I'm going to be able to afford that, or how I'm going to be able to like provide for myself as of right now. I'm really fortunate that, again, I am so young, and like this isn't, I feel like for someone, if I had like a family, I would be really scared right now. But because it's just me and I've been living in my apartment for a little while, my rent's not outrageous.
Mm-hmm.
I pay around like $500, so I'm pretty fortunate that like I'll be able to, hopefully, as long as I get the government assistance that I'm supposed to get, be able to like keep my place probably.
Did you file for unemployment?
I did. I only got like $200 a week though.
Wow.
Yeah.
So they take into account your hourly wage, not the tips that you would have been making.
Exactly. Exactly. And I actually, at the Monarch Club, they pay us a little bit better than they do other servers. So I wonder if I would have gotten less if I had been making regular server wage, which is anywhere from like $3 to $5. And I make $7, which is still under minimum wage.
You know, you said that your rent is $500 and your unemployment check is $200. So, I mean, obviously you're paying for other things other than rent. How big is the gap between your monthly expenses and what you're getting from unemployment?
Oh, man. Jeez Louise. So, I mean, typically what I make each week is around, like, I make usually around $500 a week with my job. So it's quite a big from expenses. I mean, it's probably like at least like a $200-$300 like gap.
Right.
Where it's really just like cutting out the non-essentials at that point, where it's like, I don't know if I'm going to keep any of my streaming sites. I don't know if I'm going to like be able to like keep like the subscriptions that I have to stuff like that, which I am including in expenses right now just because there's nothing else to do at home.
Sanity.
But, yeah. You know, yeah, that's the gap because my rent is about $500. Electric can be anywhere from like $20 to $50 plus like Wi-Fi. And like, that's really, you know, that's about it for me. But I'm like also like a college student who doesn't have kids. And yeah. I mean, I stocked up on food because of my restaurant closing.
Yeah.
So, you know, I feel like I'm in a better position than most, to be real with you. And I feel very fortunate for that. I'm really just worried about people who like have kids and are already on welfare and can't afford these things to begin with.
Have you had a conversation with your landlord yet?
I have actually. It wasn't very fruitful, to be honest. It took me a while to get a hold of them. They don't seem to really have any procedures in place. I know as of right now, they're not doing really any repairs on the buildings unless they're emergencies. And as far as like being able to pay my rent, I asked them, I'm like, are we going to waive late fees? Will there be a grace period at the end of all this that if I have accrued rent, that I'll have a certain amount of time that I'll be able to pay it? And they actually haven't answered any of those questions, except for, yes, there will be a late fee.
When is your next rent check due?
In April, like April 1st. I paid already for March, so I'm fine there. But it's due April 1st.
Do you feel like you have any options for finding other work right now?
I mean, I've heard people talking about grocery stores, but I don't have a car. So for people without a car in this pandemic where they're like shutting down public transportation or urging you not to take public transportation, I don't really see a lot of options for myself.
Do you feel like you're going to be able to keep your place?
I don't know. That's the scariest thing about all this, is that all I can do is stay positive. But realistically, I really don't know. It depends on how long this all lasts. For myself, I feel like I'm going to be able to keep it for the next month, but I don't know about after that. I know right now the city of Detroit's not doing any evictions, but what my fear is what happens after that, is that when the coronavirus does all this, you know, calms down, will I get a grace period from my landlord to be able to pay my rent back? And that's, you know, is the grace period going to be enough time for me to pay my rent back?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's really the biggest fear, is like, I have no idea. I think like how everyone else feels, it's just uncertainty of like not knowing. It's like, I feel pretty secure that I can pay for April's month, but what about May or June? I don't know.
Yeah. Do you have any kind of safety net, like maybe friends you could double up with? I know the presence of two cats kind of changes that equation for a lot of friends' minds.
So, I mean, right now, my partner's staying with me. But I mean, he has his own rent to pay. I feel like most people right now, unless you already have roommates that you're living with, I think everyone already has their own financial burdens in place. You know, so it doesn't feel like, other than maybe my family, who have, as of right now, I mean, there's the potential that my mom is without work right now. My grandparents aren't able to work as much. Their business is going to take a hit. So I felt a lot more secure a couple of days ago, feeling like, okay, well, I can ask my family. But now sometimes it feels like, even though I know I could ask my family to help me as much as they can, whenever they can, it doesn't even feel like that's an option sometimes, because I know they have to provide for themselves as well.
Oh my gosh, your grandparents are still working?
Well, they own their own business, so yeah.
Wow. Do you mind saying what line of work they're in?
Yeah, they have a pest control company.
Oof. I mean, so, it just, know, there's
that
some
doesn't
things.
Stop.
Yeah, there's some things that people have to keep calling for, but I'm sure there's going to be some folks who will be like just going to the hardware store and trying to take care of it themselves.
Oh, absolutely. And that's kind of the thing, is that like as of right now, their business is doing fine. But again, it's the longevity of this issue of what's going to happen again in May or June.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not so scared for April. It's really just like the longevity and how long is this going to last?
Crystal, you mentioned this before, but what are your hopes for what are your long term career hopes?
I mean, I want to be a teacher, but right now schools are shut down. You know, I'm supposed to be getting my certification, but Wayne State just shut down. They're doing online classes for classes that I can't take online. I'm supposed to be going to school every week during the semester and spending 20 hours in a school shadowing a teacher and teaching in a classroom.
Well, that's not happening.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the really the big fear. My other online classes are fine. I know I'll get the credits for that. But my program, there's two phases of clinicals that you're supposed to do. And I'm in the first phase, so I don't know if I'm going to be allowed to move on to the second phase or not, if I have enough hours or what they're going to do. And that's why I'm really worried. I mean, my partner is a music student and he can't do any of his classes online because he needs to be with an instructor who's supposed to be like teaching him ear training and teaching him mixing and mastering in a studio. So it's like there's a lot of stuff that can't be transferred online.
It sounds like there's just an awful lot of questions up in the air at the moment.
Yeah, everything is just one question mark.
How are you getting yourself through this day to day?
I am kind of just like making a lot of art and just taking it day by day. I mean, I'm doing the work that my teachers are asking me to do. And, you know, I'm doing applying for unemployment. I'm doing everything that anyone says that I can do to help prepare myself. But other than that, I just kind of try to stay positive.
It's not easy.
No, it's not. It's really not.
Well, Crystal, thank you so much for talking to us about this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Crystal Michelle Brasseur. We spoke with her for today's show via Skype. We were just talking with a waitress in Detroit who's out of work because of the new coronavirus. Let's move a little further up the economic line to see how owners of rental properties are experiencing this moment, as so many hourly workers have lost their jobs. Tim Vanest lives in Shelby Township, and he owns 38 rental units, two of which are vacant right now along the edge of Detroit.
I come here every day on two city blocks and take care of those, you know, anything big and small in that neighborhood. So I'm property owner, property manager, maintenance man, everything.
Chief cook, bottle washer.
Right.
Yeah. When did you start feeling that the new coronavirus was going to be a major challenge?
About a month ago, maybe more. And I began, my daughter who works with me, I began telling her, don't spend any money that's, you know, any frivolous money.
Right.
You know, because it's coming.
How many of your tenants have been in touch?
I've talked with my tenants on a fairly regular basis. Probably, I know right now my count is 10 of my tenants that are unable to pay.
Mm-hmm.
10 out of those 35, so about one-third of my businesses.
Is it all related to the virus?
Oh, yes. Most of those are food service workers, either waitresses. I have quite a few managers, like Pizza Hut managers and Kentucky Fried Chicken managers and waitresses and, you know, the like. So a lot of food service workers.
How do people sound?
They're all worried. You know, they're can't pay you type, you know. They know that I'll work with them. They know that, you know, they pay me face-to-face every month. So we have dialogue all the time. Is everything okay? How are you doing? But they're worried. Many of them are young enough to where they really haven't been through anything, any major financial hiccup like this. And for me, it's a lot like 11 years ago.
Would you say that most of them are more worried about getting sick or about what this is, about what the work slowdown is going to mean for them and their families?
They're not worried about getting sick. They're off work.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I shouldn't say they're not worried about it, but I don't see anybody in the neighborhood wearing a mask or gloves or, you know, sanitizing the outside of their vehicle. None of that.
Yeah. Tim, in the way that most homeowners owe money on their home mortgage, I'm assuming you owe some money on your properties, right?
That's no longer true.
Ah, okay.
11 years ago, I choked on mortgages when they withdrew my line of credit. You know, this was the housing crisis, right? The housing bubble. And I suffered for about 10 years, but basically sacrificed enough to where I have paid them off. So, I mean, I've been through it before. I don't know what other property owners are going to do that have been diving into this market and thinking that owning rental properties is easy. You know, I don't know what the other folks are going to do with their mortgages.
Can you take us back to what was going on in the Great Recession with you and sort of what you learned when all of a sudden there you were with properties on hand, renters not being able to pay, and lenders coming at you for what you owed them?
I did not miss any payments, but what I did experience were, I'll say 25% vacancy. I had six vacant at one time. I did manage to make all my payments, but I did not hire anybody. I started cutting all the lawns myself, roofs, floors, walls, doors. I did everything myself. Basically, all I had was my health, my muscle, and a credit cards. I did max out two credit cards paying the property taxes 1 year, and it took me forever to pay that off. But really, what we experienced back then is much the same now. You know, where's the money going to come from? Not going to be able to hire anybody. That's for sure.
You know, I saw one letter that a property management company sent to tenants suggesting that everyone was in the same boat here and that properties are essentially small businesses and some of them will succeed and some of them will fail and that they expected rent to be paid on time. Is that the kind of line that you're taking with your tenants right now?
I haven't pursued collections because the courts are down right now.
Yeah.
You know, the governor has signed an order that postpones any eviction activities till April 17th or 19th, something like that. So I'm not pursuing it at this time. The last time we went through this, there really wasn't any good prospective tenants in the pipeline either. We don't pay our people very much. So these folks that I described earlier, either pensioners on Social Security, I have about 20% of people that are on fixed incomes. They don't have a bunch of money. So, and when we have childcare workers, security guards, restaurant managers, and the like that are getting what I consider to be less than a living wage, and they can get rent for $530 here. But essentially, they cannot. Nobody ever moves away from here for less money.
Right.
So really, that's where we're at. Is who am I going to get if I can? If I could get the courts to work for me and move somebody out, who else has got money? I know. I've worked with many of them for years. They've been here with me for a long time. I'm not just going to process a bunch of eviction notices, even if I could.
Right.
So yeah, they understand. They get a bill every month. They know their balance is climbing. We'll work it out is the way I'm approaching it.
How worried are you about the long-term outlook?
Yeah, this one is so uncertain in terms of the end of it. You know, last time, by the time people went back to work, it was for less money and fewer hours. Now I believe when they go back to work, they'll probably get good hours and probably have, you know, at least the same pay. But who knows when that will be. So I'll share with you that I have enough in my property tax savings account to pay the taxes this year. So I'm beyond this year, I can't even make a prediction.
The question of the longer term outlook is, it sounds like it's definitely on your mind.
Oh, it's uncertain. Everything is uncertain for now. You know, I could be myself, you know, I think myself essential. If they've got a plumbing problem, I'm on it right away, roof leak or otherwise. I'm serving people. And many of them are elderly. I think myself essential, but if I get contaminated, and I go down, how it's just going to be bad for everybody.
What are some of the things you're doing to protect yourself right now?
Well, the front seat of my car has masks, safety glasses, rubber gloves, spray bleach. And I gear up if I have to go somewhere, whether it's to get gasoline or go to Home Depot. Home Depot is just one hotbed for contamination as far as I can tell. I gear up and I'm wiping my handles in and out. Continue to wash my hands and wear a mask. Yesterday, I received the keys back to a house, for example, and I'm wearing gloves, a mask, glasses, and got spray bleach and throw the keys on the counter and douse them with bleach. I even had to sanitize the pen for the signature of, you know, the date and time when I got the keys back. It's almost impossible. It's almost impossible to stay clean. I'm worried.
Once you start thinking about surfaces, you can't stop.
Right. Everything you touch, gas pumps, I like to pay cash these days. Cash. People pay me in cash. Formerly, I wouldn't hesitate really to lick my fingers and count it, you know, while the client is right there. Now it's a different story altogether. Just a big worry.
What are some of the things that you're doing in your own life just to prepare yourself financially for what may be ahead? You mentioned that you asked your daughter not to make any major purchases or anything. Are there ways you're changing the way you live?
No, because it's fairly modest anyway. We did stock up something months ago, told my girlfriend to buy a bunch of toilet paper, so we didn't even have to do that battle.
Smart man.
You know, my life is pretty modest, you know, so I'm not really changing anything other than I am mentally, I'm afraid to invest in a new roof on any house, or, you know, I'm just not going to be making any investments in these houses that I can't do myself. Since these people pay me, like I said, in person, you tend to care about them. If they have a flat tire when you're driving by their house in the morning, and you can, you come back and fill it for them. You know, that's just generally how I operate. So it's a we're all in this together thing, you know?
Yeah. Well, Tim, we wish you all the luck and the best of health in every sense all through this.
You bet. And you too. And all your listeners, let's just be good to each other and bump elbows with you soon, I hope.
That's Tim Vanest, an independent property owner in Shelby Township. The financial system's pretty complex. The minute somebody buys a property, its mortgage may be quickly repackaged and sold on the secondary market. So odds are, if you need to negotiate payments, you're not dealing with anyone you've ever met. But we did want to speak with someone in the banking industry about what's happening in their offices right now. Owen Lee is co-owner and CEO of Success Mortgage Partners in Plymouth, Michigan. How are you holding up right now?
We're doing very well. We're doing very well. I'm extremely blessed to work with optimistic people and an optimistic staff. And all things considered, we're doing very well. But thank you for asking.
What are you telling borrowers right now?
Well, that's an interesting question. For borrowers right now, we are telling them that while we're not quite at business as usual, I should say, we're really at a time of fluctuation, but the best medicine is just calm. Our industry, the mortgage industry, has received tremendous support from the Federal Reserve over the past 8 or 9 calendar days. They've made it very clear that they're going to step in and stabilize the home mortgage industry, the residential mortgage industry, in a very large and meaningful way. And that is literally, as we speak, as we do this interview, calming the markets for securities that are backed by residential mortgages.
Right. What are some of the most common questions that you're hearing from borrowers at a time like this?
Our number one most common question is, can I still close if I am a furloughed employee or if I'm displaced from my job, but that displacement is expected to be short?
So meaning to say, and if you're in the process of buying a place, can you still close?
Correct. And as of right now, as you and I are having this interview, you still do need to be employed in order to get a mortgage. And I'm not trying to be funny about saying that, but if you've been temporarily unemployed or furloughed or displaced from your job, you really shouldn't close on your mortgage.
We do know that some people who have a typical mortgage loan are being encouraged to talk to their lenders if they think they can't mm-hmm. make their payments. Does the same mm-hmm. hold true if you own a larger building that's an investment property? Like, is there flexibility?
Communication is always the best policy. Honest communication about exactly where you are currently and what you anticipate to happen is always the best case. But generally speaking, if you own a property as an investment or a commercial building or whatnot, your loan is probably held by a bank. And if you have a problem making a payment, I would give the bank a call to discuss that with them, because they may have some type of forbearance program for you. The facts and circumstances as the different orders and government actions are taking place is literally changing by the day or sometimes even by the hour.
Owen, do you hear a lot of folks in the industry talking about this period, the lessons that were learned during the financial crisis in 2008 and 2009?
Oh, I think that the financial crisis in 08 and 09, I think, was much more changing the fundamentals of the economy. This situation is much more temporary, but a lot of the lessons that we learned, and I was in the industry in 07, 08, 09, in Michigan, in Plymouth, we were very hard hit. I think some of the lessons we learned about what worked then provide a tremendous blueprint for the situation we're looking at today.
Owen Lee is the co-owner and CEO of Success Mortgage Partners in Plymouth. Owen, thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, thank you. I enjoyed being with you. Have a great day.
It has been a rough week, putting it mildly, for service industry folks all across the country. On this edition of Cheers, Michigan Radio's Lester Graham and his mixologist collaborator Tammy Coxon have this salute to the restaurant and bar workers we miss.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Hi, Tammy.
Hi, Lester.
That's Tammy Coxon with Tammy's Tastings. This is one of the few times I know what you're going to make just by looking at the bottles. You're going to make a Toronto.
I am going to make a Toronto, one of your favorite cocktails.
Actually, it's one of the very first cocktails. This is like 8 years ago at your very first Tammy's Tastings class. I took my first sip of a Toronto then, and I remember it being kind of like the aroma of a cedar cigar box. It was just really, really something that I had never experienced before. It's very, very good. So why are we making this today?
We're making this today kind of in solidarity for all the folks in the restaurant and bar industry who are really struggling right now.
Right, with everybody closed to dine in and bars doing what they can to support their employees, it's still really rough out there.
That's right. So I chose a Toronto today because what gives it that cedar cigar box aroma is Fernet Branca, which is one of these funky Italian liqueurs that we call Amaros. And this one kind of took off in San Francisco and quickly became known as the bartender's handshake. It was a little sign. Industry folks would pour Fernet shots for each other. If the bartender really liked you as a customer, they might pour you a Fernet shot. If you've never had a Fernet shot, just be warned, you might think they hate you, but they actually love you.
It is bracing, that's for sure. I've come to love Fernet Branca and just can't imagine not liking it. But that first time, I was thinking, wow, what is this?
So that's what we're doing today. We're sort of putting a little Fernet Branca and combining it with some Long Road Distillers rye whiskey for a drink called the Toronto, which is honestly kind of just a little tweak on an old fashioned, which is another industry favorite.
So a little bartender's elbow bump, we'll call it, in this one is basically it.
Exactly.
How do you make this?
2 ounces of rye whiskey of your choice. Even though this is called Toronto, I wouldn't use most Canadian whiskeys, but you could use something that was a 100% rye kind of product. But any American rye whiskey works really well here. 1/4 ounce of simple syrup, 1/4 ounce of Fernet Branca, couple dashes of Angostura bitters. And so if you're an old-fashioned drinker, you recognize that. It's just an old-fashioned with a little of this minty, chocolatey, bitter kind of herbal liqueur.
And as I recall, that class was stirred, not shaken, and you definitely stirred this one.
That's right. No citrus in here, so you want to stir it with ice for a good long time. Even though this is kind of a riff on an old-fashioned, it's not served on the rocks. It's served in a coupe or a martini glass. And so you want to make sure that it's as cold as you want it to be when you are finished making it, because it'll never get any colder after that.
Yep. That's the Toronto I remember. This thing just never fails. I find it really, really comforting.
You might be the only person to ever describe Fernet as comforting.
Well, this cocktail certainly is, and I like Fernet as well. And it's a reminder that so many of the folks that we turn to for these lovely drinks, for the great food that we're probably all missing right now, those folks, a lot of them are having a hard time, and there are a lot of relief funds out there. I guess you just have to go look for them.
Right. Go look for relief funds or order in takeout from restaurants. Now more than ever, I think those of us who are mixing drinks and cooking at home can recognize the work that the cooks and the bartenders and the dishwashers, especially the dishwashers, do in restaurants and bars. So, yeah, heart goes out to all of you.
Cheers to all our friends we miss.
Cheers.
That's our show for today. I'm April Baer. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.